Okay, good evening. I thought I would talk a little bit about a topic that's very current and very relevant, the issue of Lashon Hara in our modern day culture, particularly as it is informed by the internet environment, by the digital culture, by the social media environment, and what kind of challenges that poses to this very cherished area of Jewish law. And I think it's kind of obligatory before you start talking about the internet to point out that you're not opposed to the internet, you don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, and I would definitely say that's the case. I have an iPhone, an iPad, I'm plugged in 24/6, definitely think that there is a tremendous amount to gain from the internet, whether it is in the form of Harbatzas HaTorah, the tremendous amount of spreading Torah content and thoughts that's possible through the internet, whether it's in terms of connecting to each other, which is itself of inherent value and provides opportunities for chesed, for support, for other kinds of connection in valuable ways. There's no question that the internet provides us with tremendous opportunities to do good things in ways that we could never even imagine not so long ago. And before we start focusing specifically on the Lashon Hara considerations, within that it's also important to note that when we say that the internet provides valuable service, so we're not only talking about the nice things, about the good things. Sometimes there are things that are not so nice and not so good that the internet is also important for. Because when we talk about Lashon Hara, so we'll recognize within that context that some things are negative but have to be said, have to be publicized. Sometimes something is necessary for the protection of others, for the betterment of society overall. And in that case, when there is a need to disseminate information, so the internet's very effective for that as well. So the internet is there for us in good ways, in ways that are pleasant and positive, and also in ways that are perhaps negative in their orientation, but are also important and crucial. When we talk about that issue, just before we even get into the whole concept of the Lashon Hara that is prohibited, so we recognize that there are things that are important to be said, even if they're negative. And to place that in a little bit of context, we have a prohibition in the Torah, Lo Seilech Rachel B'Amecha, that we should not go around as talebearers telling stories about other people. Normally we're prohibited from saying bad things, but there is a trade-off, there is a balance, and perhaps that finds itself a little bit in the question one could ask about how do we understand the prohibition of Lashon Hara. That one could view the prohibition of Lashon Hara as primarily a midos consideration, primarily something that affects our character, affects our personality, that we're told not to engage in this kind of speech because it makes us diminished personalities, it makes us into people who are negative and cynical by nature, and therefore it corrupts our character, and perhaps Lashon Hara is prohibited for that reason. Maybe that's how the Torah phrases it, Lo Seilech Rachel B'Amecha, one should not walk around as a talebearer. So if that's the case, so then we could understand why there are some categories that are excluded. If we're saying something that's necessary for protection, or maybe even if it's not so urgent, but it's there to better society, so maybe one could argue that's simply not within the quality of Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara means being a gossip, indulging in negativity for the sake of negativity. And if you're motivated by a positive consideration, so then perhaps that's simply not in this category. Maybe that's not what we're talking about. And that's one way to look at it. Alternatively, one could look at it in a little bit of a different structure, and one could say that the prohibition of Lashon Hara is not necessarily about your character, it's about the effect that it has on other people. It's about harming people through speech. It's about saying something that could end up causing problems for other people, hurting their reputation, causing them to lose opportunities, whether it's a business opportunity, whether it's a shidduch opportunity, whether it's a job, whatever it is, that's perhaps the concern. And if that's the case, if we're talking about purposeful lashon hara, if we're talking about saying something that's necessary for the protection of another, so then that's not excluded from lashon hara, that would be included. That's the same thing. You're certainly causing this person to lose out on an opportunity, lose out on the job, lose out on the shidduch, lose out on whatever it is. But the reason it's justified or required is because we have a competing value. Because the Torah also tells us that we can't stand idly by when somebody is at risk. And that's what's known as lo samod al dam reyecha. Do not stand by and let someone else be hurt. And it's noteworthy that that's the second half of the same pasuk. The Torah says, on the one hand, lo seilech rechel b'yamecha. On the other hand, lo samod al dam reyecha. It's two halves of the same pasuk. And if that's the case, perhaps the message is that they're sometimes in conflict with each other. And therefore, we have to recognize, okay, on the one hand, we want to stay away from saying anything bad, but on the other hand, we also have to protect the innocent, and that will take a priority. So if that's the way we view it, that it's not excluded from lashon hara, it simply outweighs it when it's in conflict, so then those two perspectives have a little bit to say about how we make the decisions. Because one could ask, what criteria do we use in order to assess whether something is lashon hara or not? What standard do we use to whether or not something is justified? So do we have many intense conditions, or do we simply say that if it's not gossip, then it's permitted? So the Chafetz Chaim, for example, in his Sefer, he had seven conditions. He had a list of seven rules that had to be satisfied in order to ascertain that what you're saying is justified. While others felt we don't have so many rules, like the Chazanish felt that if it's simply purposeful, then it's not gossip and it's justified by that reason. And there are others who fell out somewhere in the middle. So it's interesting, there is a fascinating comment that the Parsha that we'll read soon, not yet this week, but soon, we'll read Parsha's Vayeshev. And in Parsha's Vayeshev, at the very beginning, so there is a whole discussion about the actions of Yosef. That it sounds like from the Torah that Yosef engaged in Lashon Hara. The Torah tells us that Vayaveh Yosef es dibasa amurah el avihem, that Yosef didn't get along so well with his brothers, and he would bring the bad reports to their father. So it sounds like Yosef was engaged in Lashon Hara. It sounds like he was telling bad stories about his brothers. So that's the way actually some did read it. Chafetz Chaim, in fact, thought that there was a criticizing of Yosef suggested in those psukim. But there are others who felt that that can't be the message, because after all, what was Yosef's last name? Hatzadik, right? So presumably, if he was a tzaddik, he wasn't engaged in Lashon Hara, that wasn't justified. So some assume, such as the Afikayam. The Afikayam was an associate of Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. So he has a little explanation where he suggests that if we look at this section about Yosef, so we find perhaps some guidelines as to what's considered to be l'toelas, what's considered to be justified. So he noted, to pay close attention to the psukim, you could find three rules. One rule is that when one thinks that what he's saying is justified, he has to first make sure that there's no other way to accomplish this goal, that whatever he's trying to correct can't be corrected in any other way. So from that perspective, one could ask, so why did Yosef have to tell on his brothers to his father? Why wasn't it enough to speak to them directly? Why did he have to tell on them? So to that, the Torah says that Vahunar, Esbenei Bilha, the Esbenei Zilpa, they felt he was like a little brat, they didn't take him seriously, he wasn't able to have any impact on them. So the Torah explains that essentially it wasn't possible for him to talk to them directly, he had to go right to the top. Okay, so that's rule number one, says the FDKM. There's no other way to deal with this. So rule number two, he derives from looking at the language of the Pasuk, Vayaveh Yosef es dibasa amra, that Yosef brought the bad reports. that's a little bit of a funny language, because there's so many words in Hebrew for speaking. And to say he brought, he carried the reports, it's an unusual choice of words. So says the Afikayam, he thinks the message is that when you carry a package from one side of the room to the other, so it's the same package when you pick it up and when you put it down. It doesn't change at all in the middle. So too, if you're going to give this report and you're going to maintain that it's justified, so then it has to be the exact unvarnished truth without any editorializing and without any spinning. It has to be exactly what you saw without anything added on and without anything enhanced. So the Torah is stating clearly that Yosef's bringing of these reports, it's like he brought a package, he just picked it up and put it down. It was the same thing when he picked it up and put it down. He didn't add anything to it. It says the Afikayam, that's criterion number two. And what's the third criterion? He writes that one has to also make sure that he doesn't have ulterior motives. This actually was one of the standards the Chafetz Chaim had also, and it was controversial. Something maybe we'll get to a little bit more, that there were those who argued that shouldn't be one of the criteria, because if you're trying to protect someone else, and then if the person needs to be saved, then we can't worry about whether your motives are pure or not. Maybe you don't have such pure motives, but the person still needs to be protected, so then how can we worry about that? So the Chafetz Chaim perceived that it's not just that we're worried about the justification, we're worried also about how ulterior motives could skew the story, could also lead you to perceive things in a way that's not accurate, and to convey them in a way that's not accurate. So the Torah emphasizes here that Yosef didn't have any ulterior motives. How do you see that? Because it's another funny choice of words. Says the Torah, Ve'yaveh Yosef es dibas avra el avihem, Yosef took the bad reports and brought them to their father. So that's a strange way of saying it. If you get into a fight with your brother, so do you say, I'm going to tell your father on you? What do you say to your own brother? You usually say, I'm going to tell daddy on you. I'm going to tell our father. You don't say, I'm going to tell your father. So why does the Torah say Avihem and not Aviv? If it was the same father, he was their brother. So suggests the Afikayam, the Torah is emphasizing here that he didn't have any ulterior motives, that he wasn't interested in recognizing the fact that he was also a son of Yaakov. He wasn't looking to score any points. He wasn't looking to look better in comparison. All he wanted to do was to address their bad behavior, so he brought it to their father without any thought at all that he was also his own father. So it says the Afikayam, there you have it, three criteria as to how do you know when something is justified. It has to be completely the only way to do it, completely necessary. It has to be completely accurate without any kind of editorializing or spin. It has to be without any kind of ulterior motives. There isn't any other goal that one might be hoping to accomplish through conveying this information. So that's just a little bit of a glimpse into that whole discussion of the multifaceted issue of Toelis. But the point being that sometimes we do need to say things that are negative, we need to be able to effectively convey things that are negative, and when that's the case, so then the internet can possibly be an effective tool for that as well. So we find that there's a lot of positive that the internet gives to us to accomplish our happy goals, our less happy goals, and there's a lot that's very good. So the purpose of our talk here is not to say that the internet is terrible and you should get rid of it completely, but the point is to try to paint a little bit of a picture as to how our culture perhaps has changed since the internet and social media and everything connected to that became such a fundamental part of our lives, and to try to be aware of those issues and to hopefully correct for them or to be sensitive to them. And in order to address a major cultural change, perhaps, we want to look at it through the lens of one specific halacha that we find in Lashon Hara, which is a little surprising. It's a phrase that appears in the Talmud in a few places, and it's a little bit hard to understand on the surface. Let's say I were to say that Yekusiel is... I have a friend named Yekusiel. I say, Yekusiel is a jerk. Is that Lashon Hara? Now, let's say I take one of you aside and say, you should know your Yekusiel's a jerk. Sounds like that's probably Lashon Hara, right? So let's say, instead of taking one of you aside and telling you that, so I stand up now in front of all of you, in front of the tape recorders, and I say, Yekusiel's a jerk. Does that make it better, or does that make it worse?
Worse.
I would think it makes it worse, right? I think that if you say it in front of more people, if it was bad in front of one person, in front of more people, I would think that that makes it probably a lot worse, exponentially worse, because once you start increasing the number, so then you find that geometrically it increases, and a lot of people will find out about what I just said about Yekusiel. So if you come to that conclusion, so you're in good company. Chafetz Chaim feels the same way. Chafetz Chaim writes in his Sefer that to speak Lashon Hara about one person is bad, and to speak Lashon Hara about one person to one person is bad, and to say it in front of a lot of people is worse. So then, if that's the case, so we have to figure out why there is a statement in the Talmud. The Talmud says in two places that kol milsa dis amris ape tlasa les behu mishum lishnabisha. That anything that is said in front of three, ape tlasa is a phrase meaning in front of three, is not subject, apparently, to the prohibition of Lashon Hara. And in front of three, ape tlasa is basically a code word for public knowledge. The point being that if three people know, so the entire world knows, chavra, chavra islay, v'chavra de chavra, chavra islay, that your friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend, and the assumption is that once two people know, three people know, so the whole world's going to find out soon enough. So why would it be, if we just said, you all came to the conclusion, the Chafetz Chaim agreed with you, that something said in front of many people is worse than in front of one person? So what would the Talmud mean when it says that speaking in front of a larger group somehow makes it better? It's very hard to understand on the surface. So if you look, the Rishonim discuss this, and there are basically four different schools of thought as to how to understand this. And they all reflect something about human nature. And the Chafetz Chaim therefore writes in his Sefer that we have to be aware and take into consideration all four of these perspectives. And perhaps looking at them together, it may tell us something about how our culture has changed a little bit. So you have, on the one hand, the most famous interpretation is that of the Rambam. That the Rambam understands that we're not talking about the speaker. The speaker, of course, if they say something in front of more people, is doing something worse. We're talking about the listener. But if the listener heard something in a crowd of more than three people, so then they can assume that it's going to be public knowledge, it's going to get out there, and therefore they can discuss it because they're not creating any damage, not creating any worse harm by talking about what's already out there. So that's a difficult position, because first of all, as some of the commentaries ask, just because it will become public knowledge doesn't mean that it's right for you to make it public knowledge. And it's a little bit like saying that if somebody leaves their house unlocked, so they're going to get robbed, so it's okay for you to rob them since they're going to get robbed anyway. So presumably we wouldn't say that. So why should it be okay for you to discuss this topic and to help to publicize it just because it's going to get publicized anyway? And further, shouldn't we also assume that even if it's already public knowledge, but we mentioned before that there are bad character traits involved in gossiping about others, so isn't that also an issue? Aren't you indulging in a negative character trait by talking about this? And shouldn't we say that it's inappropriate for that reason? So both of those questions perhaps could be answered by the fact that the Rambam has a clause which he adds there, which is not in the Gemara itself. The Rambam adds, "Ubilvad shlo yiskaven lahavir esakol," that this only is true as long as you don't have intent to specifically try to spread it further. You're not trying to disparage the person you're talking about. You're not looking to broaden the circle. You're just discussing it as it comes up. So it's a very limited scope, and it's not motivated by any gossip concerns or any animosity. So then perhaps that's what we're talking about. It's very, very limited, and it's not a broad license to discuss whatever you hear. So it sounds like from the Rambam that that's the most common interpretation of this phrase, Ape Tzlasa, and that's rather limited. Rashi has his own interpretation, which is also very, very limited, perhaps even more limited. Rashi understands that the listener is allowed to repeat what they hear because since the speaker said it in public, it means that they know that it's going to get out, so then the speaker is all right with it being repeated. Now, that's not going to help if the speaker was unjustified in saying the information in the first place. So who cares that the speaker is okay with it? It wasn't their opportunity. It wasn't up to them to allow it. So within this interpretation, you have to assume that it was a very narrow category, that we're not really talking about Lashon Hara, we're talking about something confidential, that the speaker said something personal about themselves, and normally you would assume that you shouldn't repeat it because it's confidential, but if they said this in front of a group of three people or more, so then they know it's going to get out, so then we could assume they're okay with that and it's not prohibited to repeat it. So those two interpretations, the Rambam and Rashi, they understand that we're talking about something that is a reference to the listener. We're not saying that the speaker is justified in speaking in front of more than three people. We're talking about the listener. The listener who heard it is allowed to repeat it under those circumstances. But there were some Rishonim who did understand that we're talking about the speaker, that somehow the speaker is more justified if there are more people in the audience. So why should that be? So one such view is Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says that it's better when you're speaking in front of more people because, says Rabbeinu Yonah, you're doing this for toelis. You're doing this for a purpose. So if you want to accomplish a purpose, you have to make sure that it gets where it needs to get. If you're just going to whisper it to one person in the corner, that's gossip, he says. Not justified if it doesn't actually accomplish something. It's only going to be justified if it's actually there to accomplish a purpose. So therefore, if it's said in a way that it's actually going to get to where it needs to get, so then that's okay. But if it's said as just the gossiping in a corner, one person at a time, so then that is simply gossip, that doesn't have any purpose, and that's where you get to basic Lashon Hara. But there's a fourth perspective, and that's what I think is most relevant to helping us understand exactly what the nature of our culture is today and how things have changed a little bit. So the fourth opinion belongs to Tosfos on the side of the page of the Talmud. And Tosfos compares this to another statement that you find in the Talmud. So let's go back to our friend Yekusiel. So we've already established that if I say Yekusiel is a jerk, so that's Lashon Hara. What if we change the story a little bit and Yekusiel is sitting right there when I say this? He can hear me say this. So does that make it better or worse? What do you think?
Better.
Better, okay. Why would you say better?
Because that was probably not something negative if you're saying it in
front of him. Oh, so that's an interesting perspective. So that might be onto something. But on the surface, it seems like we are saying something negative in this scenario. The Talmud have it, you might be onto something, as we'll see in a second. The Talmud has the statement that kol milsa dis apra dis amris ape mara lesbahu mishum lishnevisha, that anything that is stated in front of the subject is also not considered to be lashon hara in front of the person who you're talking about. So that's also counterintuitive, because most people would probably say that that's worse. Most people would say that now not only are you speaking Lashon Hara, are you disparaging this person? But you're also embarrassing them, if they're here to hear it. So then they're going to be humiliated. And that's its own Torah prohibition. That's called Onas Dvarim, hurting someone's feelings. So I would have thought that that's not better, that's worse. And if you would have thought that, so again, you're in good company, because that's also what the Chafetz Chaim says. Says the Chafetz Chaim, if you speak Lashon Hara about someone behind their back, so that's prohibited. That's a verse in the Torah in Parshas Kisavo. The Torah says, Arur Make Riehu Baseser, that cursed is one who hits somebody in the back, hits their friend from behind. That's talking about them behind their back. But, says the Chafetz Chaim, If you do it in front of them, that's worse, because it's the same thing. Plus, you're also humiliating them. You're also embarrassing them. So what does it mean when it says that somehow it's better that way? So Tosfos has an explanation, which is a little bit similar to what you said. We'll see a little bit different also. That Tosfos suggests that these two statements are related. The idea that it's better if you say something in public, and it's better if you talk in the presence of the subject, those are addressing the same kind of situation. And it's, again, a very narrow story, very narrow application. What are we talking about? We're talking about something which isn't actually overtly negative. It's something which could be interpreted either way. Could be taken positively or negative. So the problem is, normally you shouldn't say it, because if your listeners may take it either way, either negatively or positively, so then we have to worry that maybe they'll take it negatively, and you're going to create the wrong impression. So you shouldn't say it. So in that context, says the Talmud, however, if you're saying it in public, or if you're saying it in front of the person himself, so then we can assume that the meaning is going to be taken as positive. In other words, if I get up there and I say, if I say to somebody, Yekusio, you can always count on him. So you won't necessarily know what I mean. Could mean he's reliable, you can always count on him. It's a good meaning. Or it could mean you can always count on him to mess up. You can always count on him to make a mistake. So it could be positive, it could be negative. You don't necessarily know which I mean. But if I get up there at the shul dinner, and there's many people there, and Yekusiel himself is sitting there, and I say, Yekusiel, you can always count on him. So then we can assume that I mean it positive. In other words, when it's ambiguous, in that kind of situation, perhaps is what you're getting at, that when it's in a certain context, when people are listening, it's going to get around, when the subject is listening, so then we can assume that even if in private maybe I would have said something negative, because all of us fall prey to Lashon Hara on occasion. That's what the Talmud says in the end of Bava Basra, that Hakol Vavak Lashon Hara, at least everyone is subject to some kind of Lashon Hara. So okay, so it's not possible to avoid that completely. But at least when I'm talking in public and when I'm talking in front of the person, it's safe to assume that as a decent person, I'm only going to say something positive. So I think it's very fascinating to consider the fact that that was the assumption of the Baal HaTosfos writing, let's say, about 900 years ago. But today, in 2015, in the era of the World Wide Web, where things that we say are not only Ape Tlasa, but they are Ape 7 billion, is what worldwide means. And that 7 billion probably includes the person that you're talking about. Is it still safe to assume that in that context, the things that we say, we only mean positive? What do you think? So it seems that our culture has changed. It seems that somehow our environment is different, and that we're able to say things now in this kind of a context on the internet and social media that we wouldn't have felt otherwise comfortable saying in the presence of so many people, in the presence of the person we're talking about. And if that's the case, if our culture has shifted, so this is one of the areas where it seems that we have to be more aware and more careful and perhaps correct for wherever our sensitivities have perhaps been reduced. This is evident in other areas as well. We mentioned the idea of onas tevarim. Onas tevarim, again, if you say something that hurts someone's feelings, so then that's its own Torah prohibition. And there are many times when people say things that are hurtful, and they do so in the context of the internet, they do so in the context of comments on blogs, And these are things that they never would say in public. Let's say, for example, unfortunately we see too much of this, especially in recent weeks. So if Rahman al-Islam is a tragedy, so there'll be a news site that will announce this. And then you see, all too often, you look at the comments below the item, and you see there are things that people say that they would never say directly to the family members. They would never go to a shiva and say these things, even though the family members very possibly are reading these same comments from them. So what happened? Something about this environment shifted our sensitivities, so we're no longer in the same place as far as the impact that we have in the area of Lashon Hara, the impact that we have in the area of Onoas Tevarim, and that's something that we have to take note of. And there is a phenomenon that the psychologists have documented, they call the online disinhibition effect. The reality that when we're not actually communicating face-to-face with someone, but we're sitting in front of a computer screen, perhaps in our pajamas in our mother's basement, so we're capable of saying things that we never would be able to say face-to-face. That this type of medium creates a disinhibition, creates a context in which we're able to say things in the negative sense, we're able to say things that otherwise we would have been inhibited, we would have held back. All of a sudden it becomes possible. And that's without even entering into the context of anonymity. This applies even if one is using their name in this context. But of course, if we're dealing with a situation of anonymity where we're not identifying ourselves, so then of course it becomes very easy to say things that we otherwise wouldn't say. And this was an issue that the philosophers discussed already many centuries ago. Plato talked about this. Plato talked about a hypothetical where someone could have a magic ring, that they would wear this ring and they'd be completely invisible. Nobody would be able to see what they did. So the question that was asked is, can we assume that people would maintain their sense of morality if nobody was watching, if nobody could see what they were doing? Could they still be counted on to act morally, to act responsibly? And the assumption is that most people would have a hard time sticking to that same standard of behavior if they didn't have to face a reputational cost, if they could do so with, if they could behave however they wanted and not have anyone know who it was, so then all kinds of terrible consequences would ensue. And so we could imagine as well that in this context where nobody knows who's writing, nobody knows who's commenting, that if there are things that can be done wrong in the context of speech, so we've created an environment in which all the more that can happen with impunity, and that's also something to be very concerned about. It's also noteworthy that we have a prohibition, we alluded to it before, not just of Lashon Hara, but what we call Avak Lashon Hara. Avak Lashon Hara translates literally to the dust of Lashon Hara. It's a second degree kind of Lashon Hara, another offense that's within the Lashon Hara rubric. And one of the examples the Talmud gives is if you say something positive about someone else, so that could be considered Lashon Hara. So why would it be wrong to say something positive? That seems to translate as the opposite of Lashon Hara. That's Lashon Tov. So what could be wrong about saying something positive? So many of the Rishonim understand that the issue is that if you say something positive, very often what will happen is that your listener will say, oh yeah, you think they're so great, I could tell you stories. I could tell you why they're not so great. The concern is that very often saying something positive will evoke a negative response. So that probably tells us a few things when we consider the whole arena of Lashon Hara. And that is that not only are we responsible for what we say, but we're also responsible for what we provoke. If we say something that gets others to respond negatively, that gets others to say something bad, even if we didn't say anything so terrible, so then that's also within the rubric of Lashon Hara. So nowadays, where one could have a blog or a posting where others can come and comment, and others may say things that are problematic, even if the originator didn't say anything so problematic, so then apparently that's all included in the responsibility of the original statement. So then that's also something that we have to be very careful about. If we have web pages that have open comments, that have unmoderated comments, and especially if, like we noted before, if we allow anonymity, so then the danger is very high that there could be something that we're not so proud of that's going to be our responsibility, and that's also a concern. When we take into account this issue of avak lashon hara, also more specifically, this idea of saying good things that provoke bad reactions, so there also there is an intensification in the internet culture, because it used to be that maybe this concern, if you're going to say something good, somebody's going to want to rebut it, somebody's going to argue. So once upon a time, perhaps that could be managed. But if you're speaking in a small group of friends, so you have a general sense of how they're going to respond, and you know you could say something positive about someone, and it's not necessarily going to force anyone to respond and to object. But in the context of the internet, so there's nobody who's so pure, there's nobody who's so popular that if you mention their name, there isn't somebody somewhere in the world who has a Google alert who's going to say, that person, I could tell you terrible stuff about that person. So this concern becomes greatly magnified. Now you really have a much greater likelihood that whatever you say positive is going to evoke something negative from someone else. So that, you have to figure out just exactly how much of an impact that has. Does that mean that, okay, now you can't say anything good about anybody anywhere, because you're always going to run the risk of evoking a negative response? And not necessarily. Again, it means having a little bit of ownership over the commenting process and the like. And also, there are other ways to offset it. It happens to be that Rabbeinu Yonah, living many centuries before the internet, but Rabbeinu Yonah anticipated an issue like this, because he writes in his Shari Tshuva that indeed this issue of avak lashon hara, of provoking a negative rebuttal, is intensified when you're speaking in front of a larger crowd. If you can get up and speak in front of a big room, so then there is a greater chance that somebody is going to want to come back and argue. So how do you mitigate that? That if you create an environment where it's clear that such a comment's not going to be welcomed, where it's clear that nobody's going to want to hear that, so then that will do something to offset this potential negative response. So too, if whatever context in which you communicate, if you make it clear that that kind of negative response is not welcome, that that's not going to fit in, that you're not going to be tolerant of such a response, maybe that's a little bit of a way to offset this whole issue. So those are a few additional concerns that come up when we think about how we express ourselves and how we communicate to others on the internet, and ways in which this culture has perhaps changed the landscape as far as how we look at speaking Lashon Hara and related considerations. But it's also very relevant to note that we have concerns on the receiving end as well. That we have a prohibition not only of speaking Lashon Hara, but we also have a prohibition of receiving Lashon Hara, so we call Kabbalas Lashon Hara. And that's a difficult concept to deal with in general. It's not so clear exactly what Kabbalas Lashon Hara means. It seems like we're addressing a passive role, so what exactly is included is the topic of debate. It would be perhaps easier if we say that anytime someone comes up to you and says, good evening, how are you? I'd like to tell you some Lashon Hara right now. Do you elect to receive or reject? So then, okay, so then you push the reject button. But it doesn't happen like that too often. It probably happens less than half the time. So what do you do if you've already heard the Lashon Hara? How do you deal with it? So then it was a machlokas. What exactly constitutes Kabbalas Lashon Hara? So does Kabbalas Lashon Hara mean to believe it, like the Chafetz Chaim understood? Does it mean to act upon it, as others understood? That was a topic of debate. But that also affects how we relate to information that we get over the internet. And that a part of Kabbalas Lashon Hara means that we also have to be aware that what people tell us is often not true. The prohibition of receiving Lashon Hara is phrased in the Torah in Parshas Mishpatim as Lo Sisa Shema Shav, that one should not receive a report that is Shav. Rashi and Unkelus translate the word Shav as false. One should not receive a false report. So it's interesting because our interpretation of the prohibition of Lashon Hara, we normally understand it to mean that you shouldn't relate things that are true, that are negative. And here the Torah says you're prohibited to receive Lashon Hara using the phrase you shouldn't accept a false report. So which one is it? Is it true or is it false? So Rabbeinu Yonah comments over there that it means you should not receive as true a report that may be false. That is a suffix sheker. In other words, that when you listen, you should recognize that there might be reasons to doubt what's being said. It may not be so rock solid. So this is especially true on the internet. And we're dealing with an environment where things are coming from so many different places, and they're not being verified, they're not being corroborated, and even if some of them might be true and some of them might be necessary for our protection, it's equally possible that we're hearing things that are not credible. And especially in this context, if the Torah is telling us there's always an obligation to be on the guard for that, so in the context of the internet, we have an even greater obligation to be aware of just how things get thrown at us in a way that's very likely to have a lot of falsehood associated with it. So in general, the Chafetz Chaim writes that whatever we assume it means to say you can't accept Lashon Hara, it doesn't mean that you can't listen to Lashon Hara. So the question is, how does that relate to reading things on the internet? Because, says the Chafetz Chaim, listening to Lashon Hara is not prohibited as Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, but it's probably prohibited in its own right. Because even if it doesn't equal Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, it is a short jump from listening to Lashon Hara to accepting Lashon Hara. So the Chafetz Chaim would tell you that unless you think that what's being said might be necessary for your protection or for the benefit of society, that it's not wise to listen in the first place to Lashon Hara, even if that's not the same thing as Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. So then we have to make the decision. So are there websites and the like that we shouldn't even be reading in the first place, that run too great a risk of being pure gossip, that don't have any likelihood of being beneficial and being protective, being important? So then it would seem that there is a prohibition to listen. And in this case means a prohibition to read. And then Chafetz Chaim goes on to say that the prohibition is exacerbated, that even in circumstances where you are listening to Lashon Hara, you have to make sure not to endorse it, not to give any implication that you agree with it. So one has to assess, what about reading something so you're creating traffic for the page? What if you link to a page? What if you do something else? If you forward a link, if you create the impression that this is credible, that this is something that you agree with, you disseminate it, so then that might itself be an act of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. Parenthetically, there's another issue there, which is often an issue on the internet much more than it ever was before. The Chafetz Chaim writes that if you show someone a letter that somebody else wrote, and the purpose of showing the letter is to display how they're foolish or they're silly or they make mistakes in their letter, they do other things which are not to their credit, so says the Chafetz Chaim, that's also Lashon Hara. So nowadays, we show people's letters much more frequently because we just casually forward things back and forth and show other people what had been written, and that, if it's not done with the most innocent of motives, done in any way to display any kind of deficiency in the writer, so then that also seems to be an act of straight-out Lashon Hara. But in terms of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, so when we talk about listening, so if we know that something is purely gossip and doesn't have any potential to be beneficial, then it seems that we shouldn't listen in the first place. But there are times when something could be beneficial, where something could be important. So then, as the Chafetz Chaim again notes, so then you have to listen, but you don't necessarily have to accept. You have to evaluate if what you're hearing is true, if what you're hearing is worthy of your consideration. So that means creating a greater space between listening and accepting, between Shmiya and Kabbalah. And in the context of the internet, so we have to go even further, and we have to create an even bigger space between listening and receiving, because on the one hand, there's a lot of information there that could be valuable for us to know, that could be important, so it's hard for us to turn it off completely. On the other hand, there is an even greater likelihood that a lot of what we're seeing is not true and not accurate. So the internet environment, one of the key challenges that it puts on us is to be more educated consumers, is to be aware of where there are all kinds of deficiencies, where there are inaccuracies, where we know that we're not getting the whole story, and to be able to ask the right questions, to be able to ask the same kind of questions that we should have been asking anyway, just from newspapers and from conversations. We should be sensitive and aware that there are all kinds of biases that creep into our thinking, that when we hear stories and we read stories in the newspaper, so often we can see that not every question is being addressed, that not every context is being fully fleshed out. So it's incumbent upon us to be educated consumers. When we hear something, when we read something, to ask, okay, what's missing from the story? Is this person really aware of all the facts? Am I really getting everything I need to know in order to make an informed decision? And in the context of the internet, so that becomes an even greater responsibility. We need to become even more sensitive, even more aware, so that we're able to take this valuable tool and make it into something that's going to be effective and going to be positive for us and not going to do more harm than good. And I'll just end with one note, and then maybe we'll just review what we spoke about, that there is a mitzvah in the Torah, which the Ramban counts as a specific mitzvah, a mitzvah to remember the story of Miriam. That Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu, and she was immediately punished with tzaras. And the Torah tells us, seemingly in Parshas Kisaitse, that we should remember what happened to Miriam. And the Ramban writes that that's the real mitzvah in the Torah. That's one of the 613 mitzvos, to remember the story of Miriam in order to keep us away from Lashon Hara. And one could ask, so why is Lashon Hara so lucky? We have many prohibitions in the Torah. We have many Yisurim. And it's not the case that every prohibition in the Torah, there's a story about somebody who violates it and somebody who gets punished. And then there's another mitzvah to remember the story. So why is Lashon Hara so lucky? Why does this get set aside? So it seems to be that there's a message here. This was highlighted by Yitzchak Isaac Sher, who was the Mashgiach of the Sabbatki Yeshiva, that he notes that Lashon Hara is not a straightforward, simple prohibition. It's not like if I tell you not to eat chazer, okay, so you know that when you're hungry and somebody passes you some pork, so you say, okay, I shouldn't eat this, and remember not to do it. You don't need a special mitzvah to remember the prohibition of eating chazer. But Lashon Hara is far more complex. It requires a judgment call all the time. It requires us constantly to assess what's true and what's not true, what's necessary and what's not necessary, what's justified, what's our intentions. It's very complicated. And as the